good evening and welcome to the Practice Preparedness and your host, Will Hemingway, coming to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNJC, and you can stream us live from practicepreparedness.com. You can also go check us out via the link off of there or off of WNJC, what is it now? The latest one?
WNJCRadio.com.
Radio.com. But the easiest way is practicepreparedness.com. There's a link right there. Listen live. It'll take you. You can stream live or you can listen to the show if you missed it. You can listen to us in the archive replay. So there's lots of ways to do it. All you have to do is click and go. So tonight, I'm going to veer a little and touch on a kind of touchier subject that we normally don't get too straight up into, but we ride on the fringe edges of. In the past few weeks, I've had a lot of, as I always do, since lots of things happen in my world, lots of things happen, if you know what I mean. Whereas I always like to say, you have to break a few eggs to make a cake. That's what happens. Those who don't do anything never have anything go wrong, and they never make any mistakes. Those of us who do lots of things, well, you know, along the way, there are some stubbed toes, and you may step on a few other people's toes, but no progress happens without a little bit of grinding and pushing along the way. That's just the way it works. So can we start off more rocky than having a buzz in the background and it making the whole studio hum? I don't know, but we'll try something else. So here's the deal. When you are in first getting into preparedness or prepping, as a lot of people call it, or survivalism, there's a lot of really confusing different opinions and perceptions. And one of the most common ones is that of the idea that military survival or military activities or feigning being military means that you are a survivalist and that you're prepared. The question first bodes to ask, what are you prepared for? Because military activities are specific. The command structure is based on you being a conscript, based on the idea that you are there whether you like it or not. You signed on, you're in. Mission comes first, not you. There are sayings and terminologies within the military structure, things like acceptable losses. None of these things fly in the civilian environment. In the civilian environment, you are not a conscript. Though some people, including a lot of our politicians and other people in the government, have gotten confused and think that they are in charge and we're their conscripts, this is not the case. In fact, when it comes right down to it, people have free will. And when they're in a situation, even in the military, that's why they have people do things like go AWOL. They don't follow unless they believe. And this is critical because belief becomes both the bane and the help of you being able to survive. If you are going to try to fight your way through some challenge, something that you are encountering, whether it is a disaster, a personal attack, whether you are in a city, in an urban environment, and there's civil unrest, any of those things will threaten your survival. Just like running across the highway in the middle of rush hour is going to threaten your survival. But in this particular venue, we talk about being prepared for natural disasters, being prepared for man-made disasters. All of those things come together into a very tight little story about having a set of skills, a mindset, and some gear, if you're lucky enough to, that will help bring you to the end point of being able to survive to the next day in a level of safety, security, and comfort. So, there's you, even in the extent of a natural disaster, to be in a position where you should suffer. unless you failed to prepare. Sometimes it'll happen because stuff happens. But at least if you have practiced and built a mindset and a set of practice skills, they will be minimal problems that you will be able to work your way through. Unfortunately, what we find in when people start practicing and learning to do survival, it splits off into two common camps: wilderness survival or bushcrafting. And I will put my little spin on it right now. I will make my comment regarding that, which is very simple, so there's no room for error. I've got nothing against bushcrafting. I do bushcrafting, but bushcrafting is not survival or preparedness in the modern world. It is if you were forced to be somewhere where you had absolutely nothing, period, end of story, nothing, and you were in the woods. If you had an urban environment go into Tetewaki, the end of the world as we know it, as preppers like to call it, and it were to last any decent amount of time, there would be no space on Earth, and certainly not in this country, with 330-plus million people in this country, that you could go where you would be in the woods, where you'd be alone. It's not going to happen. And that's just a simple fact. If you think you're going to go kill squirrels and rabbit and live off of the country, that'll last about 2 days until all your neighbors have all shown that they're actually better at it than you, and you'll starve to death. You need to have skills to survive in an urban and a suburban environment where people have been. So when you look at that, unless you're in Montana or something, you are going to be in a situation like you are for most of my listening audience in the Delaware Valley and the Philadelphia, Greater Delaware Valley, Maryland, Delaware. There is a lot of urbanization, even in the rural areas. So when you go to look to become skilled and prepared, look at it from the standpoint of how you survive in a city and an urban environment and a suburban environment. That's one. The other side of the coin is people who put on camis or military gear and run around and play army and talk about how they're going to. There's thousands and thousands of YouTube videos out there about survivalism, and they talk about how they're going to take your stuff from you because they've got more guns and ammunition and so forth. And then you have the large majority of the people who are in the middle who are either lost or completely confused, who lean first towards bushcrafting and then towards paramilitary activity and then back and forth. And in the end, they really are completely confused and rarely ever end up with much more than preps in their closet because there's no true guidance as to what really works. And if you want to learn what works, I suggest that you get to are not low end side, but some people who work in the EMS end of the industry in the government, who work as fire marshals and fire chiefs and lieutenants and work every day of their life doing rescue work and fire work, and they deal with the problems that you encounter en masse every day, and they have skills. They can tell you what things work and what things don't. Not like reading some stupid story on the internet written by somebody who has never used it and tell you that this water filter works, that this walk into an outdoor store and they talk about how you should buy this hand pump filter and everything's cool and you never have to carry water, and then you take it out on the trail the first time and the handle breaks and you have no water all day when you're 14 miles out in the mountains or something like that. Or tells you to buy these boots because they know the name because all the police officers use them. Well, wearing a set of Bates or some of the other popular ones up into the mountains, if you're going hiking, is not going to do you very well. On the other hand, having high top boots with 8-inch sides that protect your ankles and also give you support on rocky ground is not such a bad idea. But that doesn't mean you're wearing the same boots that a police officer swears by who spends half of his time in his vehicle going around patrolling. This is not taking anything away from them. The job is different. The task is different. There's a correct tool for every job. So when we start looking at this, we start to break it down. And what we learn, and I certainly saw it again recently in two incidents where I was out working with people over the past few weeks, was how easy it is to fall into the idea that either having weapons or brute force or other things like that is a be-all, end-all to being survival. It's very easy to fall into that. It's also very sexy. I hate to use that word, but it entices you to go to that because people love to have something make them feel like they have power. The problem is you can't eat bullets. The guns won't really feed you for very long because if you don't have skills, you're not going to even find what you're going to hunt. And on top of that, what you need in physical security and protection work is completely different than that in a firearm that you're going to select for hunting, for instance. So we start to drill down in these things, and it becomes very frustrating. I talked to someone the other day who was reasonably new to preparedness, and they were basically voicing to me how absolutely frustrated they were that they hear so many people talk about getting a handgun and getting this gun and a shotgun and this and that when they're talking about survival. But when I asked them if they could tie a square knot, they had no idea. And when I asked them, when they were telling me a friend of theirs was telling them how much time they needed to spend on the range every month. Now, mind you, if you own a firearm, my opinion is you should be on the range at least once a month. Otherwise, you shouldn't have it because you won't know what to do with it, and you'll probably do something stupid and get yourself in trouble or hurt yourself or someone else if you are not well-versed and practiced with it. That said, the fact of the matter is that is only one small piece of a very complicated puzzle for a civilian to be able to be prepared and survive a challenge in a disaster, natural or man-made, terror or a hurricane or a tornado, whatever. These things don't come in 5 seconds, and you can't read them out of the SAS manual and suddenly be an expert at them. You have to know and own these things. And the best thing you can do is join groups like my groups. They're low cost, $3, whatever, $5, $10 for an outing. And you can learn and be with other people and see how they're struggling or how they're succeeding and learn from the interactions. Go out with your friends. Go camping. It's coming to a nice time of the year. Go do these things and become skilled at it. This is what you have to do in order to survive. Talking to people about how their stuff doesn't work or their stuff is so better, but it's still in the plastic in their bag, essentially removes any value. And I do have a bug in somewhere because someone actually asked me or raised a question a little while ago as to the validity of some of my advice regarding things like water filters and boots and other things because I sell some of those items on the site. And let me take this moment to be very, very clear. If you think, or if you would, sell your soul, in other words, sell your integrity by telling someone to buy something just because you made $6 off of it, there's something really wrong. On my site, I put them there because it makes it easier for people to get to, and they don't constantly send me 25 emails asking me, is this the right one? Is this the right model? Is this the right version? Because they know that I went through the trouble. When I chose to bring on the people that I did for the last 4 weeks or 3 weeks and another one on water filtration and purification, it was because I had vetted those people for for over a year. I've been talking with them. I've been going back and forth with them. I've been looking at their double-blind study tests, their laboratory third-party tests, to make sure that their equipment worked and worked over and over. And then I talk to people who use them in the field, who I work with, who have had good luck and that I've used, and I know that I've had good luck and success with. This is what you need to do. If you don't have someone to get that from, I'll give you what I have in input. If you email me on the show site at practicepreparedness.com, I will do a show on it if it's worthy, and bring in people who are experts at it to do it, along with my own experience if I have some, and have other people call in who have experience to enlighten other people. That is the purpose of this. So when we get down to it, the key point will be that you can select that you want to be in the mindset that the end of the world is coming, and that the only way you're going to survive is to have a gun and be able to do incursions and whatnot. I would say to you two things. Go on the site and you'll see a link. I think it was in the first or the second show archive to the movie called Remnants, and watch the movie Remnants, and then go and find The Road. You can find it, I think it's on Netflix. It's called The Road. It's a very, very dark movie about basically post-Armageddon with a man and his son. And you will see that if you think that that's what you're going to prepare for, and if you can find me any time in the last millennia that you can show me that that's happened anywhere here in the world, then we'll put that on the list. But until then, we can talk about what happens every day, like today. This morning, two people, or maybe more, we're not sure, they know of at least two that they've already ID'd, strapped on suicide bomb vests, and went and blew themselves up in Brussels, Belgium. And what did they do? Like typical cowards, they picked soft targets. They did not go and attack a military base. They attacked in a airport waiting holding area, and they attacked by standing in the middle of a three-car train in the underground. That is what they did. They killed over 34. The number has been changing back and forth over the day today, and injured over 200. And here's the deal. When we talk about preparedness, we can look at it from two standpoints. We can look at it and talk all day long about how, well, we would shoot them and we would do this and we would do that. And then we can talk about reality. So if you go to the show site page, on the show site page on today's article, I put a link to my article that I posted, actually three of them. One is mine on my survival sit reps with an S on the end .com page. And on there, I have an article that I wrote regarding today's bombing. And essentially, I'll kind of give you an overview. So this plays really heavily into the idea of whether or not being prepared means having guns and skills to be tactical. By the way, I'm not saying you shouldn't have them. They're a great thing to add to your list of skills. But in the big picture, you need something much more important than that. You need other skills and a mindset in order to survive. So the organized attacks in Brussels, Belgium today that ISIS claimed, as they're doing, as I said, its death toll was 34 so far that they account for, and over 200 injured. Belgium was in a state of lockdown all day today and into their morning because they're ahead of us. Europe locked down a lot of their cities. There was a warning that went out to the cities, the major cities in the United States, putting them on high alert. Russia shut down their airport. Basically, all of Europe shut down their airports in advance because they were concerned about how far it reached. In this climate that we live in today, angry retorts to these activities and political rhetoric heats up in a blink of an eye. Social media goes crazy. Twitter, I was reading tweets all day long in between other things that I had to do. And I was really amazed by the complete lack of understanding that people have of the real problem that we're dealing with and the basis on which both the people who are doing these things are coming from, and that which is the only hope in which we can resolve these problems. And all the rhetoric floating around and name-calling and claims and blame this and blame that, the fact of the matter is we need a solution. And the problem, and from my standpoint, having worked as a risk manager and an investigator most of my life, over 30 years, having worked in incidents of terror incidents hands-on, both similar and in smaller scales, I caution people to steer away from the natural human response to want to take a head. It never works. When 911 happened, there was this big outcry to go get Osama bin Laden. What good would getting Osama bin Laden and killing him have done? Because first of all, as soon as they heard that he would have been dead, they would have immediately, everyone would have said, well, okay, that's that. Even though this is like saying you took out the owner of the Eagles because they lost, and now we're going to win. That's basically how stupid that mindset is. Because really what you get down to is you have to understand that this is a group of people who have been given and then steeped in an ideology that is driving them. And if you don't understand what ideology does, this problem and your opinions and beliefs on how to solve this problem will never amount to anything. I know that sounds a little arrogant, but the fact of the matter is, this is the fact. Over the years in private investigative and law enforcement work, we saw examples over and over, and in the EMS side and in the code enforcement side, we saw the same exact things over and over. If you want to change things, you have to find the root causes for why people do, change their perceptions, and they will then fix the problems. You will never stop it by threatening killing in one side of it or writing fines and things along that line or kicking them out of places on the other. They'll just go back and do it over and over again. You have to get them to the point where they understand that their idea of what's right is not acceptable, and that though you may understand how they got there, they need to come along to a better place. Because here's the problem. Over the years, we have seen untold numbers of the same kinds of incidents motivated by prejudice, entitlement, class resentment, anti-authority, including attacks, robberies, arson, bombings, and financial destruction in cities all over the United States that had nothing to do with terror. But it is this same exact underpinning of idealism that causes the terrorist acts. And if we don't understand that, we will never fix this problem. Humans are unfortunately three things by nature: lazy, greedy, and violent. The wonderful thing about it is that we also have some really special positive gifts. We have opposable thumbs like raccoons. We can move and open things that other animals and creatures on Earth cannot do, which allow us to do things that others can't. We can create things for better or for worse. We're also gifted with a high level of communication, which today I've had challenged a little bit. But we also have a large and complex brain, which lets us do complex calculations and thought processes. These things give us the ability to rise above those three base natural tendencies of greed, laziness, and violence. As we work every day to rise above it, there are also other people who work to exploit those natural tendencies through idealism. whether it's idealism based on a sense of racial or cultural and religious superiority, or more base reasoning like anarchism or fascism, totalitarianism, gang mentality. All these things come together under idealism. And how, you might ask, does this go and fit into preparedness? I'll tell you. Because the same problems that create the terror attacks that we're dealing with all around the world are what create division and dissension within your team. If you were in a situation where you had to survive, even if it was just a week, without power, without lights, without electricity, without running water, you will not survive even that if you don't understand how these things occur, even in a small microcosm of a team, and understand how to work together to bridge the gaps that make that happen. But first and foremost, you have to understand that idealism, the biggest threat of idealism, is that it allows rational people to rationalize ignoring general rules, laws, civility, social norms, and a whole wide array of other behaviors, including rape and beatings and physical abuse and theft. How is it that when you see people come to protest for the WTO, for instance, in Seattle that happened years back, and they lit dumpsters on fire and smashed them through the front windows of Radio Shack? What did that have to do with not being happy with the World Trade Organization and how they lent money and what they expected out of the governments who took the money from them? What? Nothing. But when I interviewed people on the ground there while it was happening, because I was there, when I interviewed those people, they told me they had the right because they believed that they were fighting for the people who were downtrodden. This is idealism. There is never an excuse for violence on other people who are not attempting to hurt you. Period. It happens. Sometimes even the best of us do it. But the fact of the matter is, when you strap a bomb onto your body and you walk into the middle of an area of people just living their daily lives and you think it's acceptable behavior to blow yourself up, I'm sorry, there is no excuse. During the mid-2000s, I witnessed firsthand the way people who believe that they were doing good behaved in ways that were so stunningly apart from that, that I was without words. For weeks, I just shook my head. They actually nail-gunned a live cat to a front door of a person's home who I was protecting because they were fighting to protect animals. Please make that make sense to me. They couldn't. Even when I had them arrested and was in court with them, they still couldn't make sense of that. But they believed it, and they did it. In another case that happened in Pennsylvania, they burned down a mink farm, killing over 500 mink in this building where they were keeping them. And they also killed the security guard there under the guise that they were saving them from suffering in captivity. Later, when they were arrested, they said that they saved them from suffering. I'm sorry, to me, burning to death seems to be a pretty bad suffering. But this is the way people get when they have dropped basic common communication skills and gone to idealism and basically gone in lockstep to a thought process that takes away your ability to reason and supplants it with a set of ideals that you've been told have a higher meaning. This is dangerous, really dangerous, and it's what's threatening us so much. The incidents that happened today leave us with a couple of things. In my perception, they are a glaring lesson in the failure and an approach to thinking that passive responses will correct these problems. I am not, by the way, saying that we should go to war. But when we stand by passively and lay back and just let people go, like happened in Baltimore when they gave them a day to tear things up, light things on fire, because it let them get it out of their system. Didn't make any difference. Certainly didn't help the situation. Unfortunately, though, there are a lot more important lessons to be learned from today. And I would proffer these three lessons are at the tip of it. No amount of government protection will save us from the endless onslaught of ideologues from every ilk. That's lesson one. The Belgium authorities do not need a warrant. They are allowed to listen in, invade in your privacy, your space, search, seize, detain, interrogate, and much more at will without any stated reason or cause. Right now, that's the environment that this problem happened in today. Politicians in the United States claim that we need to broaden the government's powers in order to make us safe. You're hearing it about why we shouldn't be allowed to encrypt and protect our data from interlopers who want to steal it from us. Every day, that same government tells us that we need to protect our identity, and then they turn around and tell us that we can't protect it that way. Ask the people on the train or the airport in Brussels how much it helped them on having absolute total authority for the government to basically do whatever they wanted to them at will. It didn't do a darn thing for them. So think about that the next time someone tells you how we need to do this and we need to do that. Lesson two, a disarmed citizenry will not solve the problem. France, disarmed. No one there to fight back. This is what happened. Lesson three, the safety and security of a nation does not come from a disarmed populace. It's a bunch of poppycock. The citizens of Belgium and France, like I said, are massively restricted on their ability to not only have firearms, but to have knives, hammers, baseball bats, and a whole plethora of other things. The attacks in November in Paris underscored the fact that the pacifist mentality that creates a fertile ground for such attacks. Personal accounts of people in the concert hall in Paris when the attacks happened in November recounted how they saw the terrorists enter the hall with machine guns and hand grenades. They did nothing. They didn't even leave to go tell someone. There were several accounts. I watched one in particular on YouTube. They were talking with their friends. It was basically an interview of a witness. And they said for over 20 minutes, they watched them. They had the Kalashnikov rifles over their shoulder. They were machine guns. They had hand grenades on their belts. They watched them for 20 minutes and did nothing. They even admitted in their statement, they stayed after they saw the terrorists start firing on the crowd. No response. They didn't run. They didn't rush them to subdue them. They did absolutely nothing. Nothing. Pacifist ideals are why they did not scream about not having guns to defend themselves, because they bought the rhetoric. They believe that as long as mommy government is there, they will protect them. And I will argue, by the way, I will also say I'm not anti-government. But you have to be realistic. The government cannot be everywhere or do everything. The police cannot be everywhere and do everything for you. We have a level of personal responsibility to protect ourselves and to protect our nation. It is not something that we should be ceding to someone else because too much trouble or too threatening. This is why we have the problems we do. It never gets to needing to go to war with someone in their nation or fight on our own homeland when every day interlopers who want to come and change our world find out by interacting with us that they won't find footing on that. You know, our founding fathers in the United States believed and created our nation based upon something that the Europeans mock and never will understand. I've had hundreds of conversations with my friends who are European, and they just don't get it no matter how many times I try to explain it. We are not subjects. We are citizens. And that is thanks to our founding fathers. It began in the Declaration of Independence and carried on through the Articles of Confederation and into the Constitution. Our Constitution, unlike most others in the world, constrains the government, not the people. We, given the right and opportunity, can protect and prosper on our own. Our founding fathers knew that the biggest threat to our ability to prosper and be happy was the government. And that's why they limited it at every possible turn. And where we are now, when I hear people during this election cycle who tell me things like, well, we can't do anything anyhow. The government's in charge of it. And they, no. The government is constrained by the Constitution. These politicians who are elected by you, or you're inaction by other people who supplant your will because you do nothing, end up taking advantage of the fact that you actually believe that you have no say. In the 80s and 90s, I would write letters to the congressmen, and they would write me letters back. And I had over 50 laws that were based upon my letters to them and then the research and support documents that I sent them that ended up being passed into law in the late 80s and the early 90s. I didn't do that because I thought it was something special. In fact, I didn't think I'd ever get anywhere with it. But I found out that if you presented it the right way and you hit the right people, they would respond. This is what happens. But if you decide that you can't do anything, you have basically taken on the role of victim. And that is the threat to being a pacifist. When you decide that there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that is worthy of bringing you to the point where you will fight for it, you might as well just lay down now because you've given everything you have away. Such an environment like we live in now, without the obsequious trappings of an entitlement society, deflects such people by our sheer force, the threat thereof, and our positive direction. Is it perfect? No. Nothing is. But it's better than being enslaved to others. That's a fact. Giving every person an opportunity to excel and benefit themselves is the only real hope. The only real hope that we will ever have. Ideologues bombed the USA in the period during 1910 to 1918 several times before that even. The anarchists, the Bolsheviks, and others. We repelled them not by coddling them, but by standing firm on our belief. We're a nation of people from all over the world who came here. But the difference between where we were then and where we are now is now we are making excuses and we are saying that we're sorry for being who we are. We need to stand on the fact that our laws and constitution make us a nation different than most others, a nation where we can be and we can do things that are good. And we are not saying shun your heritage, but assimilate into our nation. And the fact of the matter is that when we get there, it's critical that we do that because we all benefit from it, and not just us here, but all around the world. We have a caller. I'll get to you in a minute. I want to go and do the commercials real quick for our sponsors. We want to thank MaxServe for sponsoring the show. And if you use Apple products and if you have them in your business, then they are the guys to go to. Give Sam a call at 888-818-MACS. He will definitely help you out. They do everything from help desk and application support to daily backup monitoring and maintenance. If you have a lot of work there, they will set up a priority response and reduced hourly rate pricing for you. They know what it takes to make your Apple products sing. Get a hold of them today. Call Sam at MaxServe. It's M-A-C SERV.com or call them at 888-818-MACS today. And our other sponsor is TaxStop. They are your one and only stop for all of your tax preparation needs. You can call them today at 856-779-1714. TaxStop has been in business for years, and they have a whole group of people working for them who are skilled. They have two EAs, two registered agents with the IRS who can help you out and represent you with the IRS in case things haven't gone so well in the past, and they help you clean it up. They can do your tax prep for your individual, your small business, your partnerships, and your corporations too. Call them today at 856-779-1714. All right, we're going to jump to our caller. Hello?
Hi, Ralph. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing good.
So that was my rant for today. What can I tell you? I can't get past the fact that people just don't understand. I heard all day today on the news about how we needed to give more money to this one or do more of that or not go here or not go there. The fact of the matter is you can have lots of arguments, but in the end, the minute that you decide that you're going to injure civilians who are not fighting and have no idea you're there and have no opportunity to respond, you're just wrong. And when we come down to these things with preparedness, I am much more concerned about making sure that they have skills like you do, like I do, from years of experience that they can use for every day of their life. Even if a terrorist attack happens, look how long it's been in this country since we've had one. November, when it was San Bernardino, in one place out of 330 million. I'm not minimizing it, but I'm much more worried about really being prepared about things that really matter that happen every day.
Yeah, and that's really the thing, is that there's a lot of stuff that happens each and every day. So, and it shouldn't be minimized. You know, there's important parts about everybody doing their responsibility and, you know, see something, say something, which is a phenomenal program. You know, that's really where the bulk of things can get done in a terrorism world. They, you know, if you're trying to stop something that's already started, we've already missed the boat, you know, and that's, most people don't quite get that piece. You know, you were talking earlier about some of the different riots that have occurred. You know, how many people go to those events, not necessarily looking for trouble, but looking to state their opinion, have their voices heard, and really get into that whole group think process where, you know, if it was them in a normal, realistic day, they wouldn't participate in something like what they're about to do and smashing windows and setting things on fire. They, you know, and that's a hard piece. You know, some of the different riots that occurred, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, I particularly remember one where, you know, mom's on television dragging Junior off, you know, because Junior was out participating, you know, in something that initially he may have had well intentions for and just crashed and burned.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really important piece. You know, we are led by the people who we choose to surround ourselves with. And sometimes it's a dangerous thing, you know. You know, I'll hang out with this guy, you know, his intentions aren't bad, you know, but maybe he's just doing the wrong thing right now. Whoa, time out. You know, it really comes down to morals, values, and standards. And that whole piece of, hey, you know, who are my friends? Where am I going? How am I getting there? You know, even if you get to the right outcome, but you do it in the wrong way, it's still inappropriate.
Yeah.
You know, the different folks that, you know, come out to the different groups and stuff like that, well-intentioned, good people, looking to surround themselves, to work through a good process, and to come out with something solid. But just as anybody who's ever taught a class, and you get that one bad student that you just feel like will never go away.
I've never had that happen.
It happens. You get sucked into a conversation, and then you're like, why am I having a conversation with somebody who doesn't even understand the concept I'm trying to describe? and that's kind of where you're going with this whole piece, is that, the people who have a good understanding of what the real hazards are, not the crazy folks that, have a perception that
you're a little muffled.
No, it's on the rocks, I'm going to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if you're 100 miles from when Yellowstone erupts, surviving it may not be the best thing in the entire world.
Yeah.
Because you will die an ugly and horrible death. So look at the things that you can have positive effect and positive outcome on.
Right.
Where can I change my destiny? Oh, in the winter snowstorm that pulls the wires down, turns the lights out for a week, 12 days, 18 days, pretty common. That's the place where you can start off, make your family comfortable. By addressing one thing, you're going to start to address those other facets of emergency preparedness issues.
Yeah.
Power goes out for 18 days. How big of an emergency is that?
Yeah, it's a pretty big emergency for most people, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you have two teenage kids at home, turn the television off for a couple hours in the night, see how much they complain.
Yeah.
And I say that jokingly, because I have to myself. that is just a bit of reality. The stuff that happened today, like you're saying. I see a guy walking in and he looks like the Incredible Hulk, and he just doesn't look like he's going to exercise. Then it's probably something I'm going to want to talk to somebody about.
Mm.
Not hold off. Everything is about the piece that we can add to the puzzle.
Right.
And that's really, again, with some of the crazy TV shows and the crazy folks that go along with them, you have this perception of, okay, when the world ends, we'll be okay. Yeah, no. You won't.
Yeah.
Again, the one movie you were talking about when you first started the show, The Road, a guy and his kid try and survive, of untold proportions. And at one point, that I particularly remember and is very vivid in my mind is when the dad hands the kid the gun and says, basically, listen, if this goes bad, you know what to do.
Yes.
That's not the kind of situation that I want to teach my kids about. I want to teach them to survive the good things, the everyday things, the things that can make their lives better every day.
Right.
And if you do that, God forbid something really bad happens, and the grid goes down for months, or you have, a solar flare that shuts it down for much longer than that. You'll have those things. You'll have the training, the education, again, back to that knowledge, skill, and ability to start to deal with that and incorporate those kind of things into your plan. I'm not saying that, there's no chance that a solar flare is ever going to happen. No. But it's not something that you start off trying to deal with.
Right.
The same thing. So do I teach my kids not to, you know, go into areas that they're protesting in? Heck yes. Why? Because that's not the kind of place that they need to be. And that alleviates the situation of, okay, I've done my preparedness. I've taken myself out of the situation. Not saying you'll never get trapped, and not saying that they don't need to have a basic understanding, but, you know, crowds in a mall.
Right.
You know, somebody yells fire. Okay, crowd stampeding. How do you get out of that, kid? Oh, we just keep moving a little bit to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we find an exit door.
Right. Well, and that's and your point is exactly right. We're going to run out of time, but the you're absolutely right, and I think that's the key to it, is that what we get in that, as I started out with, about the difference between civilian preparedness and survivalism and that of a paramilitary style survivalism, is the fact is that the second only approaches one problem, and based upon the fact that they're utilizing military-style thought processes, which are based on thousands of people who can come to back them up, when they're actually going to be a handful, the likelihood of success is very low. On the other hand, as you said, if you start out and start ticking away, if I get a flat tire, if it's cold out and I get stuck, if I have snow and I get stuck, what do I do to keep from getting frostbite? What if we're out on a hike? What if we have the bicycle and we're out mountain biking in the trails? What if we're camping and we're on foot so we don't end up having lifelong injuries from this happen, and then build from there? You're building skills and abilities.
Right.
And that's,
you know, everybody that deals with the pink pajama or the black pajama folks, mm-hmm. As we tease about them in our house, mm-hmm. Those aren't going to be the people that really get through the everyday disasters, because they're not prepared for it.
Right. And that really comes right down to it. I really appreciate you jumping in and helping me out with it.
No problem. If you have a great night.
Yep. We'll talk to you a little later. All right. Bye-bye now. Okay, so in the last couple minutes, we've got 1 minute or whatever. Let me just wrap it up by saying, look, when you're hearing these people and all the rhetoric around all these things, just remember that it's not solved by giving people money. Rome tried doing that with Attila, and Attila ran them over all over Europe. It never worked. It's been done over and over again. The only way you do this is to protect what is yours by standing up for your beliefs and your things, that your lifestyle. Don't apologize for it. Don't put someone down for not, but if they come to your country, they live your way, not their way. They can go to their country and live their way. It's that simple. It's tolerance, not giving up yours for someone else's. And in the end, when you're talking about preparedness, remember, it's every day. If you're prepared for every day, it will make your life better. It will give you confidence, security, make you calm and happy every day. That's what we're talking about. So until next week, I'm Will Hemingway. Practice preparedness. Practice every day. There is no disaster when you're prepared. Be safe, and we'll see you next week.
Are you drowning in the cost from your home or business alarm system? Are you paying as much as $35 per month for a telephone line that the alarm system needs to signal for help? If you are not under contract or about to be, then you should call Integrity Protection Service at 856-861-0300. They are fully licensed and insured alarm companies serving the South Jersey and Philadelphia area. Integrity Protection Service can take over your alarm monitoring starting at $19.99 per month on a year-to-year agreement. If you want to up the ante on your security, you can have them install a cellular communicator for a one-time fee of $140 plus tax. With a cellular unit, you can dump your hardline telephone line, saving yourself from $20 to $40 per month. Did you know that 99% of burglar alarm systems never check in to assure their function? They only dial out to report a system failure or a security breach. A system with a cellular communicator checks in at least once every 15 minutes to alert the provider and you if you have been breached or having a system failure. So, if you want to save money and increase your security, go to Integrity Protection Service. They have over 30 years of investigative and physical security protection experience to help you. No long-term contracts. Integrity Protection Service wants clients, not hostages. So call them today at 856-861-0300.
So, go to our website, practicepreparedness.com. And at the bottom, you'll find a form. You can fill it out and send it to us, and I will respond directly to you to help set up a training program for you. We can make a disaster plan. We can help you write your disaster plan for your family or for your business. We can help you set up disaster preparedness drills. We can teach you how to make your kit. We can help you design and lay out your program on staying and surviving in place, or leaving your home to go to some place of safety to help yourself, your family, and those who are close to you and surround you. Don't wait. Don't put it off, because the disaster could simply be around the corner. So go to practicepreparedness.com, click on that form, and go there. You can also join our groups that are listed on there. You'll see join our groups and training. There's a whole page set there to tell you all about our training opportunities, both meetup.com groups and others. So if you have a church group, an organization who's looking to train your members, you can contact us about that too, and we can put together a discount program for all of you. And you can do that as simply as filling out the form and clicking send, and we will get right back to you.